All right, so the standard disclaimer for the next few weeks, I'm not quite sure how long, I'm standing outside on a busy street corner in Seoul, South Korea, because I'm in a tiny Airbnb where I can't make noise because it's late at night here. So I'm standing outside doing a podcast. I apologize for the sound problems, but you know, it doesn't seem like it's been that bad. No one's complained so far. I think it's okay, but I just want to explain because this is obviously weird, a weird situation. So I had this idea for this week that generally we just watch old TV shows and dissect what we thought about it. I thought what might be neat this week, there's this video game called The Last of Us that I wrote a book about that I'm sure you've heard me yammer about that before, where it was like a test book. I could never quite get myself to actually finish a novel. So instead I was like, let me just write a book about video games. So I wrote a book about this one video game and then I just put it out for free. And I was just like, hey, I did it. I did a book. Now I can write a novel that I'm still working on. But what I thought might be interesting is this game was a very award-winning, you know, greatest game of 2013 type of thing. But they just recently turned it into a TV show, like about a year ago. HBO made a show of this game. And I thought it would be kind of cool to watch the opening of the video game, which is about 15 minutes long, just the little setting up the scene of what's happening in this game. And then watching how they did that in the HBO version, which is longer, it's about half an hour. But just like two little intros, just to see how a video game did it and then how the TV version did it. If that sounds interesting at all.
Well, it sounds a little different.
Yeah, and it's kind of a neat thing because, I mean, obviously storylines in video games, they've come a long way, you know? I mean, first you had the Pac-Man days where there really was no story, and then you had Super Mario where it's like, you know, our princess is in another castle. The fact that we're now at the point that you can write a book about a video game or you can make a whole show about a video game is pretty remarkable, you know, that it's gotten to this point. But this is still pretty rare. You know, there's a reason why I picked this one game to write about, because it's, you know, most of the time if they try to make TV shows and movies out of video games, it doesn't go that well because video games are terrible. You know, like maybe they shouldn't even be telling stories most of the time. It's sort of unnecessary and weird. But in this case, it did work. It was a really cool game. And yeah, I just think this is kind of neat because this is a rare time when the TV version actually turned out well and everybody actually liked it. And it also won a bunch of awards and yada yada. But I guess we can just kind of go in blind. I don't need to explain too much, but I'll just give you the basic rundown. After the cops go by.
There's our introduction.
Yeah. Which actually, that's kind of appropriate because, you know, in video games, that's one thing with trying to tell a story in a video game is you got to wrap it around a video game. And a very common thing in video games are zombies, because if you got to fight bad guys, I mean, what's better than a zombie? A zombie, it's okay if it doesn't act right. You know, if it just runs at you and you just shoot it, hey, that's perfect, right? So there's a lot of zombie video games. And this is also a zombie video game. So I can tell you a bit more about it in between when we get to the HBO version. But basically this is just how things start. You know, it just seems like a nice normal day and then, yeah, sirens start going by and crazy stuff starts happening and you know, we tumble headlong into the apocalypse. So I won't tell you what happens here, but I guess I'll warn you a little bit because this is such a heavy scene to just throw somebody in. It's even weird to be able to describe a video game this way. But this little 15-minute opening is quite a tearjerker. It is emotionally upsetting. So I just think I'll just say that much, just so you know something's coming, not to just throw you into the pool, you know, with no warning at all.
Okay, so if I start blithering halfway through, it's acceptable?
Yeah. Yeah, like it's the kind of thing, you know, in this case, it's like, hey, whatever, it's just me and you here. But it's the kind of thing, like, I guess I would warn somebody, like, if they were at work or something. It's like, you know, if you somehow are not familiar with this game and you don't know what's going to happen and you pull this up on YouTube, just the intro to The Last of Us, like, yeah, don't watch it at work. You'll have to go into the bathroom and lock yourself in a stall and get yourself back together. You know, maybe I'm overselling it, but I don't know. It's pretty sad. But yeah, so if anybody wants to watch along with us, just look for The Last of Us PlayStation introduction. And, you know, it's all over YouTube. You can find a million versions of this.
Tommy, listen to me. He is the contractor. He's the contractor, okay? I can't lose this job. I understand. Let's talk about this in the morning, okay? We'll talk about it in the morning. All right, good night.
Hey.
Scoot.
Monday at work, huh?
All right, well, I have good news. Sarah does not become a zombie. I'll tell you, so how this works, basically, these are not normal zombie rules. They came up with their own version of zombies. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. It's on, like, nature programs sometimes and stuff, but it's called cordyceps. It's this weird fungus. This is, like, a real thing that happens to ants, where the fungus burrows into an ant's brain, and then it takes control of the ant, and it makes the ant... It makes the ant act suicidal, like it makes the ant climb up on a big leaf somewhere so that it can be easily eaten by a bird, and that's how this fungus continues its life cycle. It's this very creepy thing. So the idea they had for this game is, what if that fungus could affect human beings? You know, what if the fungus took you over and turned you into a zombie? So, if you die normal, you just die. You know, she wasn't infected with the fungus. So, just a plain, sad opening, not a creepy zombie opening.
Oh, okay. Most of these, it's usually when the person dies, then whatever, there's something going around and they all turn, everybody who dies turns into one of those.
Yeah, the famous, my favorite version of, because there's always the different explanations and the different reasons, is in Dawn of the Dead. Where the guy says, when there's no more room left in hell, the dead will walk the earth. You know, because that's just something his, like, weird voodoo Haiti grandmother used to say. Because nobody actually knows what's happening. It's just a weird mystery. So it's kind of neat in this game that it's, you know, it's not something that could medically really happen, but at least it's based on something. And you know, just a different way to do a zombie. But yeah, basically, it was really eerie when I first played that game. Because, I mean, that's pretty heavy, even, you know, for apocalypse games and stuff. They're not usually, I mean, you know, it's like anything. Most video game storylines generally are quite corny. So that one was like, oh, geez. And I kind of realized partway through that opening, on the front of the game box, it is that guy Joel, and a young girl. But I realized partway through, I'm like, that doesn't look like the same girl. I don't think that is the same girl from the front of the box. And that's where that bad feeling in the back of my head started of like, uh-oh, I don't think this kid's going to make it through this fucking apocalypse. But yeah, I mean, that's also a pretty standard trope in these types of movies, is the society collapsing, you know, beginning of the crazy apocalypse. But that one was extra neat because, you know, you get to be the kid. You get to walk through the scary house. You get to be in the back of the car. Then you switch over and you're the dad and you are fighting through the crowds. And, you know, it's this rare occurrence of video game storytelling actually working. You know, like the fact that it's a video game really made it pretty cool.
So if you had been playing that video game yourself, could you have prolonged that girl's life by the choices that you made?
Or the people that you killed along the way? Because that is one thing, too, that's, I mean, it's interesting. It kind of is outside of the scope of just talking about the opening. But that was kind of the early idea with telling stories in video games, is like, well, why don't we give people options? Why don't we give people different things they can do? But I think video game writers slowly realized that just because a video game can do that, it doesn't make the story better. You know, multiple paths and multiple endings. So... basically, this game, The Last of Us, it's very much on rails. Like, everything that happens there, the only thing that could happen is it could go worse. You know, the zombies could catch you. You could die at various parts. But then if you die, it just, you know, you just try again. You have to get to that point. And that's how the whole game is. But one thing that's cool about that game is... how do I explain this? So the guy, Joel, basically the game takes place 20 years later. You know, the world is completely fucked. It's covered in this fungus. It's called The Last of Us because humankind is almost gone. There's hardly anybody left. And the only people that are left are extreme assholes, you know, just really self-interested, bad people. And Joel is one of those people. And, you know, it ties back to this moment, you know, if that could happen to him, to his life, to his daughter, why would he ever trust civilization and society again? He doesn't even care that it's going down the tubes, you know. He just rolled with it, and he's not a good person. And that's what's neat about it, is you're playing a video game, but you're not you. You're him, you know. He is his own guy. And it was like this interesting thing that, like, people were upset about the things that this game made them do. Because they're like, but I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be this bad person. I didn't want to do all these terrible things. And it's like, yeah, but that's the point of this story, is that it's not about you. It's about Joel. It's about this guy who is completely fucked in the head now and is a survivor and will fuck over anybody to survive. And too fucking bad if you don't like it. Play a different game, you know? And unfortunately, I mean, to really get too deep into it, they made a sequel and they took that same philosophy even farther, to the point that I don't like it anymore. Like, it was an interesting character study the first time, and by the second time, it's just like torture porn. It's just like, why am I watching this? Why am I playing this, you know? But it's a very interesting take, you know, of like, you're not the good guy. You're definitely not the good guy in this game. But if you were the good guy, you wouldn't be alive anymore. So you just are in this moral ambiguity. Now, here we go. Apocalypse happening. Another siren going by.
Well, I have to wonder, though, why is it a game if everything is self? It's already decided. Like, you can't choose options that would change things in this thing. It's already set down. So why bother having it as a game? Why not just have it as a show? Which I guess is why they made the movie.
Yeah, and I mean, that is a fair question. That is, you know, people are somewhat divided because that company, they're called Naughty Dog, that is very much their thing. Their series before this was kind of like an Indiana Jones type of story, and it was the same thing. People are like, why isn't this a movie? You know, both sides are valid because it is very ungame-like. It is like you're playing a movie. But on the other hand, you're playing a movie. How cool is that? You know, like, sure, you can't ultimately change how things go, but when Joel is creeping through the apocalypse strangling people for resources, you're really doing that. You got to press the button to strangle people, and it fucking feels really weird, and it's an experience that you cannot have watching a movie. You know, you really feel like you're complicit in this.
So let's say you didn't press the button, though. Wouldn't he still strangle the person?
Well, no, then you would just lose, you know, the game. And that is the weird thing, is like every time you die, it just takes you back a minute or two and you just do it again until you succeed.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so, you know, because the game part, you can fail, you know, but ultimately, yeah, there's only one route. So, I mean, on the surface, I know that sounds weird, but then to get deep into the video game side of it, like, there's other games that do the opposite. Like, they give you all the options and you can choose which way to go, but they're always extremely, to me anyway, some people like that stuff, but I find them very unsatisfying, because if you can have any ending, then nothing that happened meant anything. You know, like, you can't have foreshadowing, you can't have thematic through lines, you can't have the character feel real if you could make him do anything. You know, like so in this case, in The Last of Us, that watch that Sarah gave him, you know, that was on his birthday. It was the last day his daughter was alive. That watch is pretty fucking important. So he wears that watch, even though it's broken and it doesn't work anymore, for the next 20 years. And every time he's in a situation where he's got some moral quandary, he glances down at the watch, you know, to remind him of all this stuff. And then he makes the wrong choice and he does something awful. But if you could just choose for him not to do that, then what would be the point of this story? What would be the point of showing what happened to him? You know, it would just dissolve. It would just mean nothing. So, I mean, I think this is what's weird about telling stories in video games. Ultimately, I think video games would be okay if they didn't have stories at all because of these types of problems. It's like, if you give people options, it might be a better video game, but it's a worse story. So maybe we just shouldn't bother, you know? I would be more willing to go with that.
And that's where I'm going with. I guess when you think of it as a game you can either win or lose. But in this case, it looks like it's already been predetermined. Whatever's going to happen has been predetermined, and it really doesn't matter what you do or what you want to do. And I guess that's life.
Yeah, no.
That's life.
Well, also what's so neat about it is just that even though the game parts are somewhat minimalized, it still adds to the story in a way that only a video game could. Because, like, you know, we've all seen a million shows or movies about the apocalypse. There's for some reason a bunch of people all hanging around smoking or stopped right next to me. They're all just chatting to each other and smoking, having their amazing South Korean Saturday night. They're not young either. They're like white haired. They're all just chilling. Anyway, whatever. I'll talk back. I can't walk away from them because I'll lose my Wi-Fi signal. I'm stuck where I am. Anyway, what I was going to say is, even though the gameplay parts are kind of minimized and, you know, you have limited stuff you can do, it's still, so you play this game, and it's a very hard game, I should mention, too. It's really tough, very punishing, and you're always starved for resources. Joel never has enough ammunition, you know, for his guns. He never has enough to protect himself. He's like, you know, you're always up against the wall, and, or even if you do lose at a fight, and you have to do it again, and you got to do it again, and you got to do it again, and the game is also not short. It takes like 13 or 14 hours to beat this game. By the end, you start to really identify with this guy. Like, this world does suck. Everyone is attacking me. Everyone's trying to take everything that I have. I can barely hold on by my fingertips. I can barely survive in this world. Why even try anymore? Why even care about anyone, you know? And, like, I've never felt like I was in the shoes of just this, you know, desperate survivalist like I did in this case. Because you have to actually do it, you know? So, I mean, there's definitely value still, even though it is on rails, to playing this experience.
Well, and the other thing about it is, I guess because it is a game, you are seeing it through the person. Like, you saw things through the eyes of that little girl. You see them through the eyes of the father. Whereas in a movie, you can't really do that so much. There's back off scenes and no, it's different. I mean, you do get the impression that you are in control of that body, even though you're not really in control of that body, but you're seeing it through that body.
Yeah. Another thing that's kind of neat is it does allow too for a kind of storytelling that you also can only do in a video game where, for the lack of a better term, I'll call it the boring parts. You know, there's a lot of the game where you're just exploring old, it's like beautiful, like the world after everything collapses, it is gorgeous. It's just all these like crumbling buildings covered in vines and, you know, overgrowth because the world has been fucked for 20 years. And you're just like crawling through these old buildings and you're just trying to scavenge for materials and just trying to find ammunition and trying to find things to, you know, fix your wounds or whatever. And you do that for hours, hours and hours. And it's engaging because it's a video game and because your hackles are up all the time and you're always worried about what's going to happen. But if they did that in a movie or a TV show, it would be so boring, you know? Like the 20th time he opened a drawer hoping to find some duct tape and there's nothing in it would be so boring. But when you're playing it as a game, you're in it, you know? You're like, I need this stuff. I need to scrounge for every little thing. So it allows you to spend time not only with this guy, but spend time in this world to a degree that you just can't do in a movie without boring everybody to death. So yeah, there's a, I don't know, it's, this is again why I wrote a whole book about it. It's pretty interesting, especially for someone who grew up with video games like I did. It's like, man, we sure have gotten to a weird point, you know? Video games have gotten pretty damn weird.
So yeah, it kind of like puts it more like in real time than you could do in a movie.
Yeah, you really feel like you're in this guy's skin, which is why I was surprised how much backlash there was to the ending of the story. It is like Joel's got a moral quandary and he does the wrong thing and he's a bad person. And people were really upset that they had to do that. But I think partially because they spent so much time in this guy's skin that it makes them feel extra bad. But I felt the opposite. I felt like, I get it, man. I get why he is this way. Like, you've just demonstrated to me. Because, like, that's the weird line this game walks, is that it's not fun. You know, if you think of a video game as a fun time, The Last of Us is not fun. It is grueling. It is, like, hard to get through, not only as a video game, but hard to get through on an emotional level, because Sarah is not the only person who dies. Everybody fucking dies in this story. But it is, like, a hard line to walk, because then they did a sequel where, like I was saying, they upped the ante even more. And that one, I was like, I'm out. I don't like this anymore. This is, you're taking liberties with my freaking emotions at this point. You just gotta F off. This is ridiculous. But it's still, it's an admirable thing to try to do. It's ballsy to make a game that when people say, that game's not fun, the people who made the game are like, yeah, no shit, it's not fun. It's the apocalypse, asshole. You know? You want a fun game? We got plenty of fun games. Go play one of those. What I was going to show you next is they did make the TV version, and now all that stuff I was talking about is gone. There is no more playing the game. Now it is just a TV show. So I was very unsure how it was going to go, but it went really well, and they did a lot of really neat stuff, and they made some interesting choices to turn it into a TV show.
I'm curious to see how did they make something better, because that animation in that was incredible. And I can't imagine somebody being able to convert that into a movie and making it better.
Oh, yeah, well, I guess, okay, so that's one thing I'll mention then about the HBO version, because it's a very, I mean, it's arguably the most famous scene in the game is Sarah's death right there at the start. You know, it's like, it's so unexpected for a game to hit you that hard right at the start. And it's like, holy crap. And that is a great example, too, of how talented that team is that the famous story about that scene is that, you know, they did it with real actors, obviously. They had them in those little motion capture suits, you know, with the little, have you ever seen that, like, in behind-the-scenes stuff where they're wearing those suits that have, like, little white balls all over them?
I can't say I have.
So, yeah, it's basically, it must be a really tough way to be an actor. Because instead of being in a field, you know, with other actors doing the scene, they're just in a motion capture studio, just a big room with, you know, foam mats on the ground. And they're wearing these body suits that have little white balls all over them. And the white balls are so the computer can track them. So then they do act out the scene, but yeah, they're just dressed in these silly, weird outfits. And then later, the computer guys come in and turn them into video game characters. So it must be a tough gig. But supposedly in that scene, the guy who plays Joel, he said it was one of his, like, proudest acting moments. He went way over the top. He's just like, no, oh no, Sarah, you know, and like he was really proud of himself that he managed to be such an actor, a giant capital A actor, and, you know, cry for his dead daughter. And then the dude who directed the game weeks later came back, maybe months later, and was like, we got to redo that scene. That's not right. And the guy couldn't believe it. He's like, what do you mean that's not right? That's the greatest acting I ever did in my whole life. And the direction was, and we got to do it again because you got to make it smaller, you know? Like, yes, this is devastating to this man. This is like, he's never coming back from this. He's spiritually dead from this point on. But the way to express that is not to have him cry to the heavens. You got to be small with it. You got to be quiet
exactly.
With it.
Underplay is so much more effective in anything like that than that over dramatic stuff. That's like people look at that and say, oh, for God's sake, that's just too much. Nobody carries on like that.
Yeah, and I thought that was a very interesting anecdote because, yeah, it's true in general. And man, especially, it's an especially brave move with a video game. It's hard to imagine a video game being subtle, you know, like they would go big every time. And it was just really to the credit of that team and of this game that they went back and they redid the whole thing. And then they got that scene as it is, which is like a classic, like it's an all-time classic.
Yeah, it's the underplay. underplay is so much more effective, and it's harder to do than that over the top stuff. Really, that guy might have thought he did the most fantastic acting in the world, but over the top is so easy. It's the underplay, and if you can carry that emotion and have it affect people, that does it.
So then what's interesting about the HBO show, this HBO show also, I mean, obviously HBO is a big-time network. The guy who directed the show, he did the miniseries about Chernobyl. I haven't seen it, but it won a lot of awards. Apparently it was really good. So another good team, but a different team. And interestingly, the guy who played Joel and the girl who played Sarah, I believe both of them, when they did the show, they didn't know anything about the game. They deliberately did not watch any of the footage from the game because they didn't want to just, you know, be doing an impersonation of the game. They wanted to, you know, be actors, bring their own acting to it. So I was especially curious about that scene in the show. It's like, are they also going to realize that you don't want to go too big with it? And they did a good job. They pulled it off. I mean, the game will always be my favorite. I like the game better than the show. But the show is still really good. And just that part in particular, I don't know. I always wanted to know what, like, the guy who plays Joel in the show, his name is Pedro Pascal. He's pretty famous these days. And he is a really good actor. But I always wondered what he thought after they filmed the show, when he did finally go look at the game. I wonder if there were any points where he's like, "Ah, damn, like, the video game is better than what I did." You know, like, how is the stupid-ass video game this good? But he still did a fine job. You know, he did a very good job. But yeah, what I thought was interesting about this HBO opening is it's longer. It's like twice as long. But the stuff they added was all very smart. Like, this is where I was confident that they were in good hands. They didn't just add a bunch of weird stuff that didn't matter. They didn't just drag it out for no reason. They added stuff that makes sense. And in particular, that stuff about how the outbreak is because of a fungus, that plays into this especially. It's just the kind of little detail you might not notice unless I point it out, so I'll just mention it here, is what ultimately, they never explained this in the game, this was the thing they added for the show, but what they added for the show is that the beginning of the outbreak came from, I think it's from Jakarta, but somewhere overseas, and it got into flour. So the first people to get infected are people who ate this flour. And, you know, flour as in F-L-O-U-R. And I think that's kind of neat because you can see that in this extended opening. Just how Sarah and Joel happen to not eat anything that involves flour, but some of their neighbors and stuff do. and it's just kind of a cool little extra thing.
Well, I really can't see how they could pull off a movie with human actors and make it better than that video game. So I'm going to do a comparison thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't say it was better. Also, I mean, I guess with the game, you know, they kind of want to get you into it, so that's why it was only 15 minutes long. You know, if they had spent half an hour in the video game, it would have been too long, too slow. And that is to its benefit, I think. But yeah, like, if you're going to make a show and you're going to stretch it out, as TV inevitably does, yeah, I was pretty impressed with how they did this. So yeah, let's check it out.
And that's your biggest worry?
Yes, any kind of virus, but most probably something similar to influenza.
Because of air travel?
Through the air. Coughing.
I'm sorry, I meant people on planes. That was something you described in your book.
Yes, a new virus in Madagascar, say, could be in Chicago within a matter of weeks, and we end up with a global pandemic. Pan meaning all, the whole world becomes sick all at once.
And Dr. Newman, you're also an epidemiologist. I presume the prospect of a viral pandemic keeps you up at night as well?
No.
No?
No.
All right, well, that's our show.
No, mankind has been at war with the virus from the start. Sometimes millions.
And then the title card is supposed to come up that says 20 years later, and then the adventure continues.
Okay. It was not bad. They put a lot of explanation in it without really drilling it to death.
Yeah, it was one of those situations where when I heard they were making a TV show, you know, it's, just let me let this motorcycle guy go by. Man, that's one thing that happens a lot in South Korea. You know, when people ride bicycles on the sidewalk, People here ride like great big 200-pound scooters on the sidewalk all the time. Delivery men and stuff, they're just weaving around, and it's like, can't you stay on the road, dude? But yeah, one of these cases where I was like, well, that seems like an unnecessary show to make, obviously, because the game is, you know, already like a movie. But there's a lot of people that are never going to play the game, so it's like, all right, you know, they're going to make it, they're going to make it. Why not? So then the next thing is, you could just make it exactly like the game, and arguably maybe that would be better, but then why bother? That's a weird thing to do too. So I kind of had accepted that it's like, okay, I know they're going to add a bunch of stuff. It's inevitable, you know, otherwise why would they make this? So I was kind of worried, like you were saying, as we were watching it, I had the same worry as you of like, what is all this extra stuff? Like, why are we at the watch store? Why are we at the neighbors? Why are we at the school? But ultimately, I think it was kind of neat because I do feel like if you're going to add stuff, I think it did actually add some things to the story.
Yes, and it did become self-explanatory at the end. Like, once you saw what was going on, you say, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense that they would put that in. That makes sense. Like I said, for example, when the girl in the night, she's going to the neighbor's house. Well, if she hadn't had a good relationship with those neighbors, she wouldn't have just walked into their house in the middle of the night. But she had a very good rapport with them. And of course, so, you know, they were like her grandparents. So of course she would go in and check on them. That made complete sense. So I, you know, at first I was like, yeah, why are we being introduced to them? Well, it made sense. And especially when you saw the poor old grandmother, great grandmother, whoever she was in the wheelchair, who couldn't move hardly at all. And man, she's the one who's, I'm coming after you, honey. She really boogied along.
Man, there are so many motorcycles tonight. This is like a dual layered, this podcast, while I'm in Seoul. You get the stuff we're talking about, and then you get the what it's like on a street corner in Seoul. But the way the game did it is no explanation whatsoever. You don't know who these people are. Like I was saying, I didn't even know that that wasn't the girl from the front of the box necessarily. I didn't know it was going to be 20 years later. I knew something about zombies, but you know, you learn all of this stuff about the fungus later on. Where, yeah, the show did the other thing, where it explains it up front. But I did like how they did it, that news program from the 60s, where the guy, because everybody always said about The Last of Us, like, it's a very neat idea, but the science of it couldn't work, you know? It can only work with insects. There's no way that the cordyceps fungus could transfer over to people. And that's still true, but I liked how that science guy, he gives you that one extra step that was never in the game of the only reason this fungus has not mutated is because it doesn't need to. But if global warming happened, they didn't have that term back then, but if the temperature of the Earth went up and the things that it used to be in a symbiosis with were no longer available, maybe it would mutate to take over people. And it's like, oh, neat. You know, it gives you that little extra thing to get scared about because, you know, I mean, it's warm right now. You know, like global warming is super duper real. So it's very easy to, and it's winter time for anyone listening to this in the future. I'm just standing outside and it's fine. So that's a very believable reason that that this fungus could mutate and take us over. So yeah, then you can combine the 1-2 punch. You start off with that news show from the 60s explaining how this could happen, and then it's such economical storytelling. If you want to really show what the power of this fungus taking over people is, Granny is a perfect, you know, she can't even move. But once the fungus is in her, she can fucking move. So just imagine that times 6 billion people, and yeah, it's a serious problem. So I thought that was all pretty cool.
I did like that introduction too with the talk show host, because as I said earlier, he's such a guffaw, joke, isn't this funny? Everything that was said, he was just such a jerk. But then as the explanation came on, you could see in both him and the audience this seriousness coming on, like, holy Moses, maybe this could be a reality. And that was really quite believable, because the two guys that he was interviewing were such obvious nerdy types. They've got this explanation, but he's just like, yuck, I'm on the talk show host. Let's have a few little jokes here and make light of this. But then that transition that comes over him, and he's quite engrossed in what they're saying, completely different. It was good. It was a good introduction. I was surprised.
It's also kind of neat how real world events kind of add to that creepiness as well, because the game came out in 2013, so that was well before COVID, and the show came out after COVID. So it's extremely easy to imagine a COVID type scenario, but like, what if COVID were worse? What if it was something we couldn't stop, you know?
Before that time, though, in the early 2000s, we had like there was the chicken virus. There were any number of viruses that were going around the world in smaller pockets, so that people were getting the impression that with air travel and this could happen. It was becoming quite a reality in the early 2000s, even long before COVID, 15 years before COVID.
Yeah, and then COVID was just the, stay indoors, shut everything down, like the biggest, I mean, not the biggest ever example. I'm sure, like, the Black Plague and stuff was worse, but the worst modern example. And it was neat where, because we're all very aware that the world is connected, and all the airplanes and flights every day. Like, if something does happen anywhere on the Earth, it's coming for us. Like, it's going to spread that day. So I did also like those extra details, like that the outbreak originated, you know, in Jakarta, and they just, you know, they hear something on the news that morning about Jakarta, and they just are only half paying attention. Because, I mean, that happens to me every day. Every time a news story happens, I'm the last to know. I'm just not really paying attention. So there was like a very realistic way that you might experience a terrible calamity happening is like, maybe you're not all the way paying attention at first, and you hear something on the radio, but you're just like, where's Jakarta? What's all that? You know? So that was a nice little detail. And then it was all, again, stuff that was not in the game that they added in. But this idea, because they get into it more later in a flashback that happens later, that it was this bread factory in particular, this flour that was infected. And once you know that especially, it's really neat to watch this opening, because not only is Joel lucky that he survived 20 years into the future, he's lucky he survived that day, because there's so many little moments where, you know, the neighbors offer him biscuits and they're cramming them in Granny's face, and that's clearly when she got infected. And he's like, I'm on Atkins, I ain't doing that. And then he's supposed to buy a birthday cake and he forgot. You know, and just like, there's all these little things that it's like, if he had eaten any of these things, or the raisin cookies, you know, you could see on Sarah's face, she's like, ugh, if those had been chocolate chip, I would eat them, but I hate raisin cookies, but she's too polite to say it, so she didn't eat the cookies, you know, like they just dodged a bullet. And it works in the fiction of the series later on, because, you know, like I was saying, 20 years in the future, it's called The Last of Us because nobody's fucking left, you know, like the fungus won, basically, people are almost extinct. So just that they even made it through that day. And that's all new stuff, you know, like, so that's what I thought was really cool about the HBO show. It's like, if you're gonna expand and you're gonna add all these extra scenes, it's neat that they're not just nothing. You know, they actually kind of thought about it and they're like, what can we add in here?
And the other thing, yeah, when you're saying about the fungus one, that's exactly what the scientist in 1968 on the talk show had said. They said, well, what would happen? He said, well, it would win. Fungus would win. The other point was, I had said about the clock, her going into the clock shop to get the watch fixed. And you pointed out that those people were Indonesian or East Asian, something. Whereas the family in the morning at breakfast did not pay attention to that reference to Jakarta. The people in the clock shop would, because they were from that area. So, of course, they would pay attention to any news that was coming out of Jakarta. And then obviously they're panicking. They're shutting down the shop, and nobody understands why. But that's because they know something's going on, because they listen.
Yeah, and even that, it is kind of cool, because, like, what else could they do? You know, like, they can't tell this girl, like, hey, by the way, here's what's actually happening, because first off, they don't know. And she's just a random customer anyway. And, like, I don't know, yeah, like, I thought it was, like, this all just kind of feels like what would probably happen, you know? Like, what if some crazy shit started happening here, and you wake up to an email from me, because it's the middle of the night here, or daytime here when it's the middle of the night there, I mean, and you know, I send you an email or something that says like, oh my God, get ready, the world's on fire. You know, like, so eerie, so creepy, but so cool.
Well, I gotta say, it was well done. I was surprised. I wasn't expecting it to be any good at all, but it was good.
And it's a very rare situation too. I mean, I don't think you could have done this with really almost any other video game, even up to, like I was saying, even the sequel. I don't know what's going to happen with this show because they're making more of the show, but the game just fell apart. Like, the further adventures of the people in the game is not that good. So I think we're going straight back to, video games are crappy and TV shows and movies about video games are crappy. That's probably where the future is going to be once again, just like it always has been. But in this one case, it's pretty neat. Like, for once, a video game had a good story, and then for once, somebody made a good TV show version. So we might as well just appreciate what we got, appreciate that it ever happened at all. So I assume you'll probably never really dive into this. I could tell you real briefly what happens if you're curious.
Sure, finish it off for me.
So anyone listening, obviously if you're interested in this, I recommend playing the game or watching the show or doing both. So you definitely want to turn off now. You definitely don't want to listen to this. but basically, so Joel and Tommy both survive into the future, into 20 years in the future when the world's all fucked. But Joel is so awful. Like, you know, they never show what happened to them, but they insinuate that the things they had to do to survive are so terrible that Tommy took off and became like a born-again Christian, and he's just like, even he can't stand to be around Joel anymore. But there's this group working on a cure. You know, they're trying to make a cure for this, you know, one, like the last remaining group that has enough wherewithal to have science facilities and stuff. Like, this is really kind of it. This is our last shot. And they find this girl who is immune. You know, she gets bit by one of the fungus zombies and doesn't turn. Everybody else turns within like 3 hours and she's fine. So basically, this girl is the key to the cure. They're hoping they can make a vaccine through studying this girl. And through happenstance and, you know, the craziness of the future world, Joel ends up being the only one around who's still alive, who's able to take this girl across the country to the science facility. And he doesn't want to do it, but, you know, through storyline circumstances and stuff, because he's really, you know, he's just shut off. He's shut off from the world, and he especially doesn't want to be around a teenage girl because it obviously reminds him of his daughter. So then through the course of the video game, it's just the two of them traveling across America, murdering everyone in sight and, you know, barely surviving. And slowly, Joel's defenses break down and, you know, he basically becomes the surrogate father to this girl. But he's not necessarily the surrogate father that you want to have because he's fucking crazy. You know, he's a crazy old surviving, you know, survivor of just whatever. So basically what happens at the end is they find out that in order to make this vaccine, the girl, her name's Ellie. Ellie's not going to make it. You know, in order to make this vaccine, they have to cut the cordyceps stuff out of her brain and she's going to die. And she's willing to do it. She kind of wants to do it. She wants to martyr herself for a chance to save the world. But Joel has kind of taken on the role now. He's decided he's her new dad, basically. And in order to extricate her from this situation, he kills all the doctors, the last doctors in the world, the last surgeons, the last people that could make a vaccine. He's like, no way, man. If it comes down to my new daughter or the human race, I pick my new daughter, fuck the human race. And he destroys the whole plan and kills all the doctors. and again, that's like what I was saying at the start, is like, you know, that's the thing people didn't want to do. People didn't want to do that, but they had to because that's the way the game is set up. And it is just one of those things that it's like, it makes sense that he would feel that way. He lost one daughter to just the horrors of society once, he's not going to let that happen a second time for this fucking weird cure that may or may not actually work. And he's just like, fuck that. Fuck you. Fuck all of you. You're not killing her. You're not taking her. You're dead. And that's how the fucking game ends, is that, you know, he saved her, quote unquote, but by saving her, he might have doomed everybody else. So a pretty creepy ending. But it's also one of those things that, you know, I think it's interesting that at the time, especially when it first came out, there was the main divide, I think, was people who had kids and people who didn't. People who didn't have kids were like, man, Joel, what an asshole. He doomed everyone. But people who have kids are like, no, man, fuck you. You don't get to cut my daughter's brain open, just even if it does, because, you know, maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't. Who knows? That's a whole other part of the story. But yeah, but he's like an ultra parent, you know, because of all the shit he went through, because he repressed everything that happened to his real daughter for 20 straight years. And then that whole time he just had the world just trying to destroy him, you know? So yeah, at the end, when it's like, should I protect what's mine or should I be magnanimous to the world and to the humans? He's like, nah, fuck the humans. Fuck them all. So anyway, that's how it ends. Pretty crazy. The whole thing is like a very strange story.
Well, and it's but all pretty a pretty depressing story anyway, so you might as well have a depressing ending.
Yeah, because, I mean, we also have plenty of video games about the apocalypse that are lots of fun. You know, you go through the wasteland and you fight mutants and stuff. So, yeah, this was much more the real version of it. It's like, probably this is the end. Probably people are getting shaken off the planet. We ain't coming back. What are the chances that a nice thing is going to happen inside of that scenario?
If the world had allowed itself to get in such a condition anyway that there was no hope and people were dying front, left, and center, well, maybe then that is the way it should be. Let everybody go.
Yeah, because it does bring up, that's also like the larger theme that happens in a lot of zombie stuff, the fungus, I mean, it's bad. It's tough to fight against, but it's not impossible. I mean, after 20 years, there are still some people that are alive. So again, it comes back to that classic trope of, if only people could get along, if only people could organize and not fight with each other, then, you know, we probably could rebound. But if we can't, then we can't, you know? Which, that's also one of the reasons why, yeah, the vaccine story didn't work for me as well, because the group that's making this vaccine did not seem particularly trustworthy to me. And yeah, there's just that larger thing of like, we shouldn't need a vaccine. If the human race can't get their shit together enough to organize against this problem, then then too bad, I guess. But it is very neat that you can, you know, argue both sides. It was a really good story for that, of just, you know, like it's very easy to understand why Joel is the way he is without condoning it. You know, it's neat. It's very good. But then, unfortunately, yeah, they made a sequel, which, you know, if the TV show was unnecessary, the sequel was incredibly unnecessary. You know, it ended on this nice, morally ambiguous note, gave you a lot to think about, and then the sequel just goes on, more stuff happens, and like, it's not even worth getting into because it's so much worse. It's like, it really, I don't know, it becomes like a psychological study of the guy who made those games, of like, what the heck happened to you? Do you need to talk to somebody? Like, I know the first one was bleak, but the second one is like just ridiculous. But yeah, that's a different story. So let's just pretend it never happened is my, is generally how I view it. But anyway, yeah, so there we go. I guess I should say too, if anybody is curious about the book I wrote about The Last of Us, I guess I could point people that way. Cause yeah, it's for free. If you go to my website is keithcourage.com, which is an old TurboGrafx game, and you can download the book, you can read it. I did an audiobook version because I got that kind of time. Yeah, just go check it out. It's free. You know, I just did it as a writing exercise, but I'm pretty proud of it. I think it's pretty good. Some people who worked on those games actually read it, and I like had a little Skype talk with them. We talked about it and shit. It was cool.
I'll have to check it out.
Well, no, you probably won't care. I mean, it's way in depth. Like, it is not a short book. It's you know, but it's kind of you to say that. That's another thing, though, that's neat about it is like I was saying too about the game, where the 20 years in the future parts are, they're so beautiful, because like you can find, when you look at real life photos, like of you know, cities that have been reclaimed by nature. You know, it's amazing how fast that if people abandon a place, how fast it gets covered with vines and with overgrowth, and it's like falling apart, but it looks really beautiful. I literally just thought that today as I was walking by, it's called Bukhansan National Park here in Seoul, and I was walking through there, and there's the horrible air pollution in the air over these beautiful mountains. And I was just thinking, like, man, if only people weren't here. You know, if something happened to us and everybody died, man, this place is gonna be beautiful. You know? Which, hey, I don't want that to happen. But if it does happen, there's upsides, you know? You can kind of believe in the idea that the world would want to get rid of us. You know, we're like fleas on a dog. Like, so that's kind of how the fungus in The Last of Us feels. It's like, it's just this weird Mother Nature mutation because it has had enough of us and our bullshit.
There's a TV show, it's a documentary, and it's it takes major cities, and it says, it does computer graphic stuff on them, and it says like 5 years after humans are gone, and then it go 20 years after humans are gone, 50 years, 80 years, and it shows that growth of nature over and buildings collapsing and just deteriorating from rain. It shows when windows would finally break out. It's an amazing documentary.
I think I've seen that. I think it's called Life After People.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, that is great. And yeah, that is one of the other things that's what's really fun about playing The Last of Us, even though it is a depressing scenario and a depressing story. It is pretty in its own way too, because that's another thing that's neat, is getting to walk through a city in a video game. It's kind of neat because it's like this extra level. Instead of just watching it on a screen, you feel like you're really kind of walking through it and exploring through it. And yeah, there's always that thought in the back of your mind that it's like, oh yeah, sure, I hope the human race pulls through, but you know, like, there's that weird other side, that strange fatalism of just like, man, though, the world is kind of really pretty when we're not here anymore.